The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Let's begin with a sitting. Let's sit for maybe 10, 15 minutes. In the last minutes of this meditation, I'd like to offer you some questions for reflection. You can think about them any way you want, these questions. Or you can listen to the questions from deep inside and see if something bubbles up from the depths of your mind, your heart, your stomach. So the first question is to reflect on what concerns, worries, uncertainties, doubts you might have about meditation practice. What are some of the doubts, concerns, worries that you have about you doing meditation practice, engaging meditation practice, the results of meditation practice? And is there any way that your concerns or uncertainties or doubts cause you to hold back in doing meditation practice? Any way in which they hold you back? Perhaps you do less meditation because of these concerns, or perhaps you don't throw yourself into it as fully, or perhaps you just kind of hover in your uncertainty. But are there any ways in which you're held back, or there's a lessening of engagement or commitment to the practice? So, welcome to our Dharma practice day. And for those of you who are new to this, these are days where we engage in the practice of meditation or the practice of the Dharma in a variety of different ways, often with much more discussion about things than we would normally do if there was just a talk. And the idea is the day is for you to explore some topic in a hopefully a very personal way, rather than the abstract, so to discover how it's meaningful for you or your relationship to certain areas of practice. And also to do so in relationship to other practitioners, so to have a chance to talk to others and hear other people about what's going on with them and their concerns or their experiences. And the topic for this year is the five hindrances, and the five hindrances are these forces in the mind, activities of the mind, that are selected by the tradition as being the most, some of the most significant hindrances or detriments to being able to pay attention, to be concentrated, to be mindful, to be aware. They are sometimes described as causing a person to be blind, because when the hindrances are operating, you're blind to your own self-interest, what's most beneficial for yourself and for others, what's best for others. So I think probably, so the first hindrance is desire, and I imagine that a good percentage of you, if not all of you, have acted on some kind of strong desire and later regretted it. And so your own self-interest maybe wasn't seen. You didn't see the difficulties of it. You didn't see the full picture. And you were kind of caught in some strong pull of into the world of desire, where the desire had its own rationale or its own strength that kind of carried you along. So the same thing with aversion or ill will. That ill will also, when we're kind of caught in the grips of ill will, we often don't see what's best for ourselves, and we often don't see what's best for others. And I suspect that some of you also have had the experience of acting on ill will and later regretting it, realizing what a mistake it was. And then there's sloth and torpor, to be caught in kind of lethargy or kind of a depressed energetic state. Is the third hindrance. The fourth one is restlessness and remorse. And the fifth one is doubt. And each of these in different ways have different dynamics that maybe interfere with our practice, mindfulness, getting concentrated, interfere with our ability to feel stable or settled in ourselves, and alert. So a big part of meditation practice, especially in the long initial stage of meditation practice, is to come to terms with these five hindrances or these forces of the mind that keep us distracted or make it difficult for us to stay present. And it's common enough for people to think that the hindrances are bad or evil or something awful and try to dismiss them or be angry with them being there. So it's common for people to kind of have a kind of an adversarial relationship to the hindrances. And I encourage people to not be adversarial towards them, but rather to get to know them, become familiar with them. Because the more we can get familiar with them, the less power they're going to have over us. The more we're going to understand how they work, the tricks that they entail. And the more we'll see the different aspects of the conditions that prompt them come into play. And so it might be a longer route to get rid of them than just kind of suppressing them or pushing them away. But it's wiser, and it has, I think, more lasting benefit to really be familiar, understand how they work. So in that regard, when you are visited by hindrance, by strong desire or ill will, the meditation approach would be, you don't necessarily act on it, but the meditation approach would be to stop and pay attention to it, get to know it well, explore it, feel it, be a naturalist of these things. And in the process of doing that, you'll probably understand it much better, how it works. And that understanding will make you freer of it, more able to work with it, not be caught by it. But also the very engagement with it, where you use your will, your choice, act of free choice, to turn towards it and investigate it. That act of free will and that act of investigation is itself a movement of freedom, is itself a stepping back and not being caught in its orbit, not being kind of have it to be in charge. By using your free will to investigate it, you're in charge in a sense. And so you're not caught as much by it. So that very investigation helps us become familiar with it, but also helps us develop certain kind of strength of independence, of not, being not swept away by it. So today the hindrance is doubt, and at least that's the way it's usually called in English. The fifth hindrance is doubt. The Pali word is vichikiccha, and some people prefer when they translate from the Pali directly to translate it as uncertainty or vacillation. And one of the reasons to be a little bit more, to choose a different word, is that there's also healthy doubt, and or appropriate doubt. And so when I left the house today, I had some doubts about how wise it was to leave in the rain just in a sweater without a jacket on or umbrella. And I had some, I said, well, maybe it won't rain so much, but I had doubts about what the weather was going to do. And that seems fine. That's not a problem with having those kinds of doubts. Or to hear certain kind of teachings and doubt what you hear, so you can investigate it more deeply or explore it more. I think it's healthy to have doubts about religious teachings, spiritual teachings, when you hear them, if they don't really work for you or don't seem rational or don't feel right. It can be very healthy to have certain kind of skeptical doubt that you investigate it or question it more fully or explore it more. Or if you're in the throes of some powerful feeling of lust for something, and to have some doubt, I don't know if this is the best thing to do right now. that can be helpful. Let me spend some time kind of investigating this before I act on this. That's also maybe healthy kind of doubt. The doubt that we're talking about in the hindrances is a doubt that interferes with our engagement with the practice, interferes with willingness to be present, interferes with being mindful, interferes with being concentrated and focused in what we're doing. Some indecision is sometimes a translation of this hindrance. Indecisive, you don't know, should I be with my breath right now, or should I do metta? Should I do loving kindness, or should I do compassion? Maybe now that's not the right time to do sitting meditation. Maybe I should do walking meditation. Then you do walking meditation, you say, I don't know if I should do walking meditation. Maybe I should be doing lying down meditation. Or maybe what I really need is a bath. and so there's an indecisiveness or uncertainty about what to do, and the result of that is we kind of don't commit to anything. We don't engage in anything. So this inability to commit or to engage fully is part of the function of this hindrance we call doubt. So therefore, uncertainty or vacillation or indecisiveness are often good synonyms, or maybe sometimes better than using the word doubt. The hindrance of doubt is the one that's most closely connected to the practice itself. There can be doubt of many things. Anything you do in life, the doubt can interfere. I can have doubt. I can wake up one morning and doubt my ability to make breakfast for my kids. And so I'll just stand there in the refrigerator with the door open looking, well, what do I do? I don't know if I, I don't know how to crack those eggs and then we don't get breakfast. So that's doubt operating. But in terms of in terms of the practice of Buddhism, meditation practice, doubt is the one hindrance that specifically has to do with the practice itself. So the hindrance of desire, you could be trying to practice meditation And then you start thinking about how much this is the perfect time for chocolate cake. And your mind starts having chocolate cake thoughts and you stop meditating. And so it's that sensual desire has taken over, and so it interferes with your meditation practice. The doubt, you could have doubt about other things. You could have sitting in meditation doubting whether you should have chocolate cake. So doubt could operate, uncertainty. But generally it's understood that the hindrance of doubt is specifically having to do with uncertainty and decision, indecisiveness, doubt about the practice itself, about the teachings or, you know, something. And so there's a variety of things you might have doubts with. What to do in practice. You know, metta, loving kindness, walking, sitting, Zen, Sufi dancing. You know, what should I be doing? And so some doubt about that, what approach to take. There can be doubt about yourself, your own ability to practice. You know, I can't do this, it sounds kind of lofty, and I'm just kind of like a klutz here. And, you know, I don't know if, you know, I'll go to the meditation, but I don't really expect much of myself. And, you know, I'll just look at the cracks in the wall because, you know, I can't really do this that they're asking me to do. So there's doubt about oneself. There's also doubts about the teachings that are the context for the practice. Well, you know, this mindfulness, it seems good to me, but they keep talking about not self. And that just is frightening kind of teaching. And it seems to be they keep talking about it when they talk about mindfulness, so there must be some connection. So I don't know if I can do this mindfulness thing, because it's going to make me go into some kind of strange kind of disassociated state of not-selfness. And so there's a hesitation then to engage because of somehow the teachings. There could also be hesitation around the results of the practice. Well, you know, mindfulness is good, and I've had some benefit from the practice. It seems to help my daily life a little bit. But to really do it, to go, you know, meditate regularly or to go on retreat, I mean, I'm a little bit worried or afraid that I'll have altered states of consciousness. I'm a little bit worried that I won't be able to operate at work when I leave and go back to work if I meditate too much. I don't know if I can, you know, if I really face what's going on inside of me, really honest and realize that I'm really struggling with my choice of livelihood. If I really sit down and face that, then I might have to change my job. And I can't do that. That's too frightening. So I don't think I should meditate much. So it's just so a whole series of kind of anticipated consequences of practice can we have doubt or fear or concern about that, and so people hold back and not commit, not engage. And then there can be also doubt about the teacher or the teachers, and you know, you hear some wonderful thing and teaching, this is a good teaching, but they say you're supposed to have a teacher, and you know, and who's this guy up there, you know, and he doesn't seem to know what he's talking about, and this and that, and so because the teacher, they have doubts about the teacher, it translates to an unwillingness to commit or engage and do the practice for oneself. It's been said that of all the hindrances, doubt is the most dangerous one for a practitioner or in relationship to practice, because if you wanted to practice, doubt is the one that's most likely to get you to stop practicing, give up the practice. Whereas if you sit and meditate and have chocolate cake thoughts, you know, you might actually, it might keep you from practicing today. You might leave here and go to a pastry shop and get, you know, 2 pounds of chocolate cake, and then realize the next day, you know, that's enough. And the next day you practice because you realize how sick you are and you realize that was... But with doubt, you know, if doubt persists, you just kind of interferes, and you just, you know, so some people are more prone to doubt than others. Some people their minds, the way their minds works. It's best not to say that, see, they take this as personal, like a personal failing. Just different minds work differently. But some people's minds tend towards more confusion. Maybe they don't. There's not as much clarity in their thinking, and so when there's a fair amount of confusion in the mind, then it's much easier to have doubt or uncertainty. And so, people who are prone to confusion this becomes often becomes their specialty, is to looking at doubt or uncertainty and understanding how it works. With all the hindrances, including doubt, but maybe more so with doubt, they sometimes have an amazing capacity to camouflage themselves, or to clothe themselves with rational beliefs. So, you know, I could be sitting here very quietly and thinking, well, you know, I'm getting pretty settled, pretty concentrated here, and it's going pretty well. But I think to really kind of feel the intimacy and the connectedness and the kind of whole body kind of feeling of meditation, I think that, you know, that the chocolate cake would really be helpful. You know, and so then, you know, so then I believe it, and then off I go, you know, get my chocolate cake. So there can be a strong sense of belief or kind of way in which the hindrances that get camouflaged, and we don't see how they operate. So doubt in particular, because doubt can come with a lot of belief, and we believe whatever doubt tells us. And it can seem very, sometimes doubt can be very rational. But the way it's, the big issue around doubt is not the doubt itself or the uncertainty itself. The big issue, I believe, is the way in which it operates to cause us to hesitate or hold back from engaging in the practice. Somehow we're not willing to commit or engage or do it. And so this idea of being held back, holding back, is a very important one. So then, is that what you want? Do you want to hold back? Or do you want to address the uncertainties, the indecisiveness, and the strong beliefs that might come along with that, that interfere with our engagement? And finally, some of the doubts that people have, some of the uncertainties that people have about practice and all that, can also be quite reasonable doubts to have. And so, not to assume that it's necessarily, you know, bad to have doubts, a person might not be committing to practice because there is, in fact, genuine uncertainty or lack of clarity about something about the practice or how to do it. And so sometimes it's good to really become clear about the questions people have, the uncertainties. So you can ask a teacher about it, or you can read study a book about that particular issue, and try to resolve the uncertainty that you have. And once the doubt has been settled, then perhaps you can throw yourself into the practice wholeheartedly. And sometimes the issue is not one of clarifying something, but rather it's a matter of seeing the doubt or the uncertainties for what it is and not believing it, and not being caught in its orbit, and then being able to kind of commit to the mindfulness, to the presence more wholeheartedly. So that's the introduction to the topic for today, the hindrance of doubt. And before I go on, do you have any questions you want to raise? Anything you want to bring up here at the beginning of the day as we start this? No doubts at all. No concerns. Okay. So during the meditation, I asked you to reflect a little bit about what doubts, uncertainties, concerns you have around meditation practice, and how those might operate as to interfere or with your engagement in the practice, cause you to hesitate, to hold back, or how might they work to hold you back. I'm sure there are concerns you have that don't cause you to hold back. Not every concern holds you back, but perhaps there are some that manifest in your life as kind of, you know, prevents you from being as committed as maybe you could reasonably be committed. Maybe it has to do with daily meditation practice. Maybe it has to do with how long you sit. Maybe it has to do with going on retreats. You know, I don't know about this retreat. Meditation every day is good, but this retreat thing, you know, and it just, so I have doubts about removing myself from society. It seems like it's a world-renouncing, world-negating kind of thing. I really feel it's important to be connected to the world. I have doubts about this retreat thing. And so there's doubts there, the concerns there that would keep you from engaging more fully in the practice. And maybe some of those concerns are reasonable, and some of those concerns need to be addressed and questioned. So that was the kind of the question I had for you, and I'm hoping that something came up in your minds during the meditation. And what I'd like to do is to have you break into groups of four. And in your groups of four, simply go around in the time that you have and say, of the concerns that came up in your mind that you feel like sharing with someone, you don't have to share things you don't want to share. But of the concerns, the worries, the doubts, the uncertainties you have, especially those that relate to practice and interfering with the practice, share what those are to the group. And you can maybe go around the circle a few times, and maybe as you hear other people, you'll realize maybe you have other concerns that you hadn't thought about yet. And this is just the time to name them, not to fix them, not to give feedback about them, but rather just to kind of name, oh, these are my concerns, and maybe a little bit why those are concerns, and kind of speak about them for a while. And I thought we would do about 10, 12 minutes of that. And so you just choose someone to start, and just go around in the circle, and take turns speaking, and just see how many times you go around and you share with that. I'll ring a bell at the end.